Welcome you all here once again this morning when we're going to be looking today at the teaching that Jesus began to preach after Peter's confession that he was the Christ. And this teaching has profound consequences for our lives and for our approach to spiritual things. The title of today's message is Dying to Live. And captured in that is this idea that unless we are willing to give up certain things that we are attached to, we will struggle to find the reality of the spiritual life here on earth. And so today, as we come to this teaching of our Lord's, we will be looking at and consolidating what has gone before in our look at the Gospel of Mark to date. We'll be looking at how this teaching is the teaching that we all must be brought to in terms of a living experience within our lives, a living revelation born on that foundation of teaching that has gone before. Let us pray. Reading from the Word this morning is from the book of Joshua. We're just reading chapter 1, verses 1 through to 9. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spoke to Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, you and all this people, to the land which I am giving to them, the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot will tread upon, I have given you, as I said to Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun, shall be your territory. No man shall be able to stand before you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will not leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide as an inheritance the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid, nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now, reading from the Gospel of Mark, it's from chapter 8, reading verses 31 to 38. And he began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer many things, and be rejected by the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He spoke this word openly. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But when he had turned around and looked at his disciples, he rebuked Peter, saying, Get behind me, Satan, for you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. When he had called the people to himself with his disciples also, he said to them, Whoever desires to come after me, Let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him the Son of Man also will be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. And our reading from the Heavenly Doctrines is from the Arcana Celestia, paragraph 8754. The person who is being regenerated is led by means of truth to the end that he may come to good, that is, come to know it, then intend it, and finally do it. But when he is being led to good by means of truth, he comes first to good which has not yet had the truths of faith implanted within it, for truths cannot be implanted until he is governed by good. He already knows them, it is true, because they are present in his memory. Yet they do not at this time reside within good, but lie outside good. Later on, when the person receives a new life, which he first receives when he is governed by good, the truths of faith are implanted, and within the internal man they enter into a marriage, so to speak, with good. Live. We've seen how this portion of Mark's Gospel is a turning point. It is the fulcrum around which the whole Gospel turns, but it is also a fulcrum around which the Lord's life on earth turned, the life of the disciples, and of course, spiritually speaking, it speaks of a point of turning within our own life. A turning which involves moving from having knowledge about God to living his life from the goodness that he is. So it is a shift from truth being in the first place to goodness becoming the thing that's in the first place. So the past focus prior to this point in the Gospel has been on watching and learning, on hearing, on obeying according to our understanding of what the Lord has been teaching us. We have seen the gathering of the disciples together, this band which facilitates the Lord's own mission here on earth. And we have seen how these disciples represent the principles of the church as they are learnt and captured within our minds. It also represents our struggle to put those principles into practice, to operate from the ground of a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others, which is the love of the neighbour. It has been on building knowledge, of consolidating that knowledge in our understanding concerning spiritual things, so that we can move on into greater things. And the Gospel turns on this confession of Peter: Thou art the Christ, not a man, not Elijah, not John the Baptist, but the living God in human form. And this acknowledgement is something we all must come to. We learn about the Lord, but the Lord has to become our living God. We have His Word with us. We learn about His Word. We learn from His Word. But there must come a point where we see that His Word is divine. It is divine truth itself, given to us, accommodated to the level of understanding that we have. And when we come to see that His Word is indeed divine truth and divine good, then there is a transformation in the very substance of our being. And that manifests itself in a new outlook, a new way of viewing things, a new focus. So with regard to this building of the understanding, I'd just like to read from the Heavenly Doctrines of Teachings of the Church, from the New Jerusalem and its Heavenly Doctrine. It says this: a man who is being regenerated has two states. The first state is when through truth he is led to good. The second state is when he acts from good and from goodness sees truth. The quality of a man's state when truth is in the first place and good is in the second. From this it is evident that while a man is being regenerated, he looks from truth to good. But after he has been regenerated, he looks from good to truth. A sort of inversion or turning takes place. And in this state, a man is being turned about. So what does that mean? Essentially what it means is that there is a period of our life, our spiritual life, where we act from what we understand to be true. It may even be false. But the key thing is that there is a genuine motive to act on the truth that we have. And as we do that, we are functioning from truth, or from our understanding of what truth is about. But that motivation, a genuine motivation to live the life according to the understanding that we have, eventually leads to a shift in our being. And suddenly what happens is that there is a transformation that takes place, and a genuine love from the Lord begins to take center stage in our life. And when that love takes center stage, suddenly truth is seen as the means by which that love can be ministered to others. Enlightenment comes. And this is the shift that has taken place around this confession. This confession we see brings about something of a conflict. There is a challenge to that old understanding. And we see that this challenge involves a tension between what divine purpose is all about, or divine interests, and what the Lord calls the interests of man. Divine interests and self-interest are at this point in conflict. And Jesus, in that whole teaching that we read from the Gospel, is emphasizing the need for personal responsibility in spiritual things in order that this tension can be resolved. There is something we must do. So the main theme flowing through there is this idea of conflict. Now, self-interest seeks to maintain states of disorder. Self-interest is not interested in the divine purpose for our lives. The only thing it is interested in is shutting the divine out, shutting the Lord out, shutting out the process that love would have us engage in. And we have seen this in some detail in terms of the religious structures that Jesus had to contend with, over which the scribes and the Pharisees, chief priests and the elders, had control. And they represent aspects of this lower nature within ourselves that seeks its own interest, that seeks to hold out the things of love, that seeks to preserve its life. And ultimately, that effort will result in a loss of true life, which is that life that the Lord so graciously and so willingly wants to impart within us all. So the divine interest is to bring us into order. That's what the Lord is continually trying to do by means of His Word and by means of influx within our hearts and minds. The Lord is seeking to right things, to invert us into a proper order, because the doctrines describe us as being head down, having the wrong things first in our life. And the Lord is trying to turn that around. And it can't occur without pain and suffering. Not because the Lord is wanting to inflict pain and suffering on us, but because of the strength of our attachment to self-interest, to the love of self, to keeping things the way they are. We see this tension captured in Peter, who in one moment is confessing the Lord to be the Christ, and in the next, the Lord is rebuking him, attributing to him the title of Satan. What's going on? Well, Peter represents our own developing understanding of faith. But it is a faith that has developed over time through learning from the Word, from the teachings of the church, pulling things together. But at the core of this learning has been self-interest. It's been concealed there. And it's this idea that as long as we know, that's enough. But what we see here is this tension coming about because it's not enough. Knowledge without action is not spiritual. It is knowledge that is just in the memory. It hasn't become integrated into the life. And it must become integrated into the life. And it can only become integrated into our lives through displacing our attachments and our love of self. Our sense of having to preserve life as it is. That has to move aside in order for this new life to enter into our life. You see, the divine order for human beings is not to grab hold and preserve things, but to give. We are created as vessels, enabled to receive love and wisdom from the Lord that it can be distributed to others. There is no taking in this. It is a givingness. And that givingness is manifested in us when we see and have a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others in every situation of our life. We can reflect and we can know what our motivations are. And we can know if we are operating out of that genuine concern. And if we're not, then we're operating from the ground of self-interest, of trying to preserve what is ours. And this manifests itself in many, many different ways. When someone challenges our self-interest or a life that is sort of rooted and grounded in that level of existence, we feel offended. we feel negativity towards others because they are encroaching on our life, which we are trying to preserve. And often, that encroachment, the Lord is trying to use that to bring about change, to get us to reflect on what is within, what's going on within us. You see, no person and no circumstance can give rise to feelings of hate, anger, envy, jealousy, any of these things. People and circumstances do not cause them. What they do is they ground them. They ground them because they already exist within us. And it is through this grounding that we are presented with a mirror by which we can reflect back on ourselves. And we will do that if we are seeking to live out of a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. But if self-interest is dominant, then we will look to blame the other. We will project outside of ourselves so that we don't have to change. And that is resistance to the spiritual life. It is resistance to the Lord's life in us and what He is wanting to do within us. So we see that the Lord talks about the fact that the Son of Man will be killed by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and on the third day He will rise again. This title of the Lord, Son of Man, has specific meaning as opposed to the Son of God. The Son of God could not be tempted, but the Son of Man is that level in the Lord's own being which can be tempted. And it's also that level within us that can be tempted. Now when a son is mentioned in the Word, it speaks of truth or what is false, depending on the context. So what we have here is the Son of Man, the truth that comes from a human understanding, or the appearance of truth, because it is not always true. It is an understanding as to what is true. That is what the Son of Man is. And of course, we all have ideas about the spiritual life. We all have ideas about what loving the Lord and loving the neighbor is. And those ideas are finite. They are limited. And because the ideas are limited, there will be elements in them which need sorting out, need purification. And it is these ideas that come under pressure in order for change to take place. Ideas we hold sacred in regard to what life is about, what my rights are perhaps, in a particular situation. Ideas which clothe themselves in spiritual terminology, but at their root, self-interest and self-preservation is the thing that motivates them. These ideas have to shift and have to change. And this is what the Son of Man is. The Son of Man that is given over to that lower level of life where temptation takes place and purification can occur. We all have experienced this. We all have had views in the past which we have had to change because the situation has demanded it. That is this attachment to ideas about life and about the world. So what about this story, the text? Well, it can be taken on a number of levels. But what I'm going to do is just look at it in terms of the Lord and what's going on here, the church and the individual. Let's think about the Lord in this situation. In its highest sense, the word is about the Lord's own internal life. So, if we take that, we can see that all the elements here represent aspects of the Lord's own psycho-spiritual makeup. What we first have is this teaching that the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days will rise again. So what we see here being described is insight coming. The Lord is actually beginning to see at this point of turning what lies ahead. That those lower things represented by the elders, the chief priests and the scribes within his own life, within the heredity he took from Mary. The lower things that he is going to have to give over to the process of coming into conflict and the temptations that are involved there. So he's beginning to see it. And it says that he spoke the word openly. So it speaks of a level of clarity now that the Lord hadn't had at this level of life before. As he begins to see how the process works and what it is he must do. And then it says Peter took hold of him. The Greek is very strong there. It says that he took hold of him and took him aside. Now Peter represents the Lord's previous understanding of how things should move along. And what this represents is that old understanding trying to encroach itself on the new enlightenment that's beginning to dawn within the Lord's own being. And what does it do? Well, it probably takes him aside and seeks to say, look, it doesn't have to be this way. It can be this way. You don't have to go through this. So it's that sort of thinking, that you don't have to engage the process. You don't have to engage life. Just do it this way and everything will be okay. You won't have to suffer. And then it says that the Lord turned and looked upon his disciples. I've mentioned that the disciples represent those principles with regard to spiritual life. And that word turned actually in the Greek could be translated converted. We see a turning in the Lord's own being as to what it is he must do, what lies ahead. And so the disciples, or those principles, show him the way that he must go. And the Lord's response is, "Get thee behind me, Satan. For you are not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men." So this element coming out of the Lord's heredity, which is interested in preservation, preserving the way things are, rises up, embodied or personified in Peter. And here the Lord, looking to the disciples, looking to those principles, sees it for what it is, and says that it must go behind. Now the Lord represents goodness, and Peter represents an understanding of truth. And up until this point, he has been led by his understanding of truth. But here we have a shift, and it says, no, truth must be in the second place. Goodness, which the Lord represents himself, or love, must be in the first place. And truth can be administered from love. But when truth tries to rule over the things of love, then it has only self-interest at its heart. Then the Lord calls together the people and his disciples. So he pulls together those principles under this new way of viewing things. And the people represent the lower aspect of our thinking and feeling. And the whole now is coming into some sort of order whereby the Lord is able to move forward toward what must come, which is His death and subsequent resurrection. So what of us then? As individuals, we have experienced this many times, I don't doubt, throughout our lives, where we have a particular view of how life should be. Perhaps we've been engaged in an area of employment for a number of years, and then we change our job. We go to a similar role, but within a different context. And the first thing we try to do is draw on that knowledge that we had acquired in the previous role. But what we find is that it doesn't fit. The basic skills are there, but because the context is different, it requires a rethink in terms of how those skills will be expressed. And during that period of transition, there's a lot of self-doubt about our ability to do the job, perhaps. But as we all know, if we have gone through that experience, is that over time, suddenly, we are just functioning as if we had been there for many, many years. A transformation occurs. So whereas we're trying to function from our understanding at some point in that transition, at the first stages of it, as time goes on, certain things get worked into our life and begin to be integrated, whereby we're able to function very fluently and with ease within the new context. Perhaps churches and education institutions are some of the worst offenders for consolidating and preserving things and not wanting to move on. Seems to be in that area where ideas and truth dominate that it very quickly moves to a point where things become consolidated and rigid, and the living aspect of what that thing is supposed to be preserving is lost. There is a need within the church for honouring the past. But honouring the past is not about honouring ritual or putting traditions in the first place. To truly honour the past, we need to go to the intent or the spirit of what was. And in terms of the new church, in its beginnings, it was about taking the doctrines and taking the word and seeing the word in a new way and being able to disseminate that to the generation that the church was in, the generation that the church had been raised up to serve. And that is always our purpose. It has never changed. But the tendency to try and capture that in rigid exterior forms serves as a substitute. And the heart becomes lost in it all. And our purpose becomes lost in it all. And the focus starts to turn towards maintenance as opposed to the living experience of what church is all about. So we need to honour the spirit of the past. And the best way we can do that is to individually and collectively focus on the need to have at our centre a genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others. That has to govern us. If it doesn't govern us, why are we here? Church speaks of community, of being engaged in one another's lives, supporting one another in that process, in the spiritual processes, which brings to the centre that genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others, or love of the neighbour. When our faith is by and large just a head thing, those connections don't exist. That's because when our faith is largely in the head, we can very easily become isolated. Isolated as individuals from one another, but isolated as a collective from the society we're here to serve. Self-interest, self-preservation separates us from one another and from the society which we are here to serve. A genuine concern for the spiritual well-being of others connects us. It has to. Because that concern flows from the Lord, and the Lord is constantly seeking to draw connections, to have us connected with one another, so that we can strengthen one another, nurture one another in the process, gain insights from the Lord through each other as to how we might live our lives more effectively. Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me. Now, the interesting thing about that word cross comes from a word stauros, and it means to fixate, to consolidate things so that they don't move on. This is the human tendency. This is the tendency in us all, because it just makes life so much easier. We don't have to deal with people or their problems. But the Lord says we have to take up our cross, take up this tendency to fixate things, to keep others out, and follow Him. It comes from recognizing that tendency exists and doing something about it, purposing within our own hearts to not let it get the better of us. For whosoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whosoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. The world struggles with the fact that one day we all pass from this life.